H for Hunting, Hitchcock, and Horizon. And perhaps in between we'll have some Heidegger. So about Hunting, a lot of things can be said, but one particular thought that I'm interested in is to go back to the beginning of mankind, to the time before the Neolithic Revolution, so before man became sedentary. That is not as far back as when we were still animals, but to the time of the hunter-gatherers, and what these gestures of hunting and gathering meant. Gathering means collecting fruits and things that can be found in nature, and bring, so to speak, the world close to one's body. Hunting goes the other way around. Like hunting an animal, for instance, means to create distance. So hunting is in that respect a gesture of projection. Projection means to throw. So throwing a stone or throwing a spear at an animal means to, well, create a distance, and create an image, in a sense, or create a distant relationship of observation and of safety, so to speak, to the world. So somehow the gesture of hunting at the very beginning of mankind is not so far away from creating an image. And if we just pursue that gesture throughout the rest of history, we have the time of the discoveries, we have tourism, we have hunting in safaris, we have globalization, and we arrive to a point in time now, already in the 19th century, but certainly today, where one can say that the whole world has been hunted down in terms of images. So we live in the age of the Weltbild, and there we have Heidegger, so of the worldview or world picture. It's hard to translate this term Weltbild. But that means that wherever we go on Earth, we're tourists. We're bound to be tourists because the image of that reality always will precede the experience. The question is, how can we still create a horizon? So how can we still have an imaginary approach to the world that is strong and experiential? And perhaps we need another philosopher than Heidegger here to figure that out, and that's why I propose to bring in Hitchcock. Hitchcock, and this is another anecdote that is related to hunting, is very good in creating kind of cinematographic hunting grounds, so to speak, for the imaginary. And he has this principle of the MacGuffin. And he explains in an interview with François Truffaut what the MacGuffin is. And he just tells an anecdote, says, well, there's two men sitting in a train and one has some kind of thing wrapped, not quite clear what it is, which sits in the rack above his head, and the other one asks, so what is it you have up there? Oh, that's a MacGuffin. Oh, a MacGuffin? So what's that for? Oh, you know, it's for lion hunting in the Scottish Highlands. And the other one says, but there are no lions in the Scottish Highlands. So, and that's exactly, says Hitchcock, what it is. A MacGuffin is nothing at all, really. It's just an element that is for the protagonists in the film of high importance, and that spurs on the curiosity of the viewer. So it's important for the plot, but not in terms of narrative, but in terms of how it spurs on the imaginary, really. The first film made by Hitchcock according to the MacGuffin principle is 39 Steps from 1935, which is the first in his so-called second period. And it's a masterpiece of dramaturgy. I think any student in dramaturgy should watch that film. And there the MacGuffin is the 39 Steps, which is, I think, a code name for a certain secret operation. But many elements in that film can take the place of a MacGuffin. There's also small objects like a pipe, which is reminiscent of the pipe of Magritte, for instance. Or it reminds me also of the crocodile we spoke about last week. Because somehow the MacGuffin, as an object or as something that spurs on curiosity but remains mute in a sense, and through that affords a horizon to occur in an imaginary landscape, It's not unlike the crocodile in contemporary cinema, the crocodile that swallows language, and therefore it's perhaps a different kind of mystery, but I think there is a MacGuffin-like quality in the crocodile.